Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by Tupaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken, and I'm in my Missouri reader seat, but I am reading from the Friday, April 5th, 2024 edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we begin now with our first piece from the top of the fold. It was like a dagger in the heart. A crowd of nearly 100 individuals sat silently Thursday evening as five black panelists described their experiences of living, working, and raising families in Dubuque. Carla Anderson, chair of Dubuque Equity and Human Rights Commission, hosted the event called Generations Unveiled, which brought together the panelists to share their stories. Anderson said she was inspired to organize the event after consistently hearing Dubuque's black history primarily told by white people. "I've been hearing these stories since I've been here, and I thought that it's time for them to tell their stories from their voices," Anderson said. Panelists were Claudette Carter Thomas, Ernestine and Melvin Moss, John Taylor, and Roger Fisher, who have lived in the area for several decades and have served as activists and volunteers throughout the community. The panelists described attending college and working in Dubuque during the late 60s, 70s, and through to the present day. They described the racism they faced after they moved to Dubuque, saying they were refused apartments, told to go back where you came from, and called racial slurs. Carter Thomas, a retired parole and probation officer, said when she first moved to Dubuque in 1974 to attend University of Dubuque, she went home after 1 year and swore she would never return. "I told my father, I'm in a community that is predominantly all white. I can't find products for my hair. I can't find even some of the foods I wanted to eat. But I told him that I got sick and tired of people calling me the N-word," she said. Acting on advice from her father, Carter Thomas returned to Dubuque, got her degree, helped found Rock of Ages Missionary Baptist Church, and got involved in a long list of community activities. Anderson noted that Thursday event was held on the 56th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Taylor, pastor of Rock of Ages Missionary Baptist Church, said he was attending University of Dubuque at the time. He remembers some white students telling black students they were glad King was dead. "That was like a dagger in the heart to African-American people. But not only that, it was like a dagger in the heart to children who were going to school in a different community that was surrounded by white folks. And then to hear that, it was very disheartening," he said. Melvin Moss, who is retired from John Deere Dubuque Works, said when he first moved to Dubuque in 1972, he couldn't find an apartment to rent. When he asked a woman why she wouldn't consider renting to him, she said it was because of the color of his skin. Melvin Moss drove back and forth between Dubuque and Madison, Wisconsin, for work until a coworker offered to let him move in with him. Then that coworker faced violence and harassment, including having his tires slashed for lending a helping hand to a black person. "We have come a long way, and we still have a long way to go," Melvin Moss said. Ernestine Moss, who is a retired Iowa Department of Health and Human Services social worker and Melvin Moss's wife, said she moved to Dubuque in 1975 and was welcomed by Ruby Sutton, equal rights advocate and former president of the Dubuque chapter of the NAACP, and her family. Ernestine Moss said she had experiences both good and bad, but emphasized that there are good people everywhere. Despite the climate in Dubuque, Fisher, who also is retired from Deere and owns Country Charm Carpet Service, fondly recalled the parties and social events held by local black residents in the 70s and early 80s and how they had so much fun. There was only about 50 of us to really interact and get together, and it was lovely, he said. Basically, there was no bickering amongst us. I mean, we were happy as hell to see somebody that looked like us. Joyce Stoffel of Dubuque attended the event and said she was glad for the opportunity to hear the panelists' stories. I think we're getting better, but I agree with everybody else. We have a long way to go, she said. But I see our ignorance melting away. Our next piece from the front page. Watershed groups to monitor levels of E. coli in creek. A local watershed management authority is preparing to launch a project with the state to monitor for the presence of a spreading contaminant in area waterways. Catfish Creek Watershed Management Authority plans to partner with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources to monitor E. coli levels at sites around the watershed that encompasses parts of Dubuque, Asbury, Piasta, and Centralia. If you look at some of our recreational areas, like Mines of Spain State Recreation Area and Swiss Valley Park, where there are kids actually recreating in the water, we want to get an understanding of that water safety, said Dubuque County Watersheds Coordinator Eric Schumach. It's the first time the DNR has entered into a contract with a district to do water quality monitoring for them. Meanwhile, board members of the Watershed Management Authority also are watching bills in the Iowa legislature that could impact aspects of their broader work. Catfish Creek WMA was formed in 2012 by local government and conservation group partners to prioritize water quality improvement, flood mitigation, and other conservation efforts for the Five River Forks in the Catfish Creek watershed. In recent years, the group has joined efforts to incentivize agricultural, property development, and municipal practices that have protected and monitored area waterways. For 3 years, Catfish Creek WMA and local water quality collaborative Dubuque County Watersheds have partnered with the University of Dubuque professor Adam Hoffman to monitor 60 surface water sites around the county for contaminants including nitrogen and phosphorus, which contribute to the growing dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. More sites in the Catfish Creek watershed recently have tested positive for E. coli, so Catfish Creek WMA soon will begin work with the DNR to measure E. coli levels at 14 sites in the watershed, especially around Dubuque. After 3 years, we have a pretty good baseline now on where some of our hotspots for other nutrient runoff are, Schmeckel said of past water monitoring work with UD. So now we are partnering with DNR to do 3 years' worth of water sampling data to specifically look at E. coli. The presence of E. coli in water, local waterways was highlighted in the Iowa DNR's draft 2024 list of impaired water segments in the state. The bacteria are found in animal waste and is responsible for 62% of impaired water segments in the state. The list of segments where E. coli was found include Catfish Creek, North Fork Catfish Creek, South Fork Catfish Creek, and Middle Fork Catfish Creek. Schmeckel said the new project will entail sampling water at the 14 sites on 30 separate occasions over a 3-year period. The project will be part of Iowa DNR's new water quality reporting to the federal government. Dubuque County Watersheds staff will conduct the E. coli testing, and Schmeckel said groups are discussing an additional water quality monitoring project with UD to further progress from their previous partnership. Catfish Creek WMA board members also shared concerns at a recent meeting about potential impacts of several pieces of legislation moving this year in Des Moines. Mike Freiberger, who represents Dubuque Soil and Water Conservation District on Catfish Creek WMA, voiced concern about a bill that would restrict Iowa's Watershed Management Authority's use of state funds. Namely, WMAs would be required to use state money to further programs identified in Iowa's nutrient reduction strategy, meaning water quality projects would be okay, but not flood protection. The bill would also change WMA's title to Watershed Management Partners, removing authority from their title and powers. The legislation advanced out of a House of Representatives committee, but has not seen a full chamber vote. Schmeichel said he thought Catfish Creek WMA's projects would be safe from any state-level restrictions. The majority of the work that we do, I think, aligns with the nutrient reduction strategy, especially the agronomic strategies focused on nitrogen reductions, for instance, he said. A lot of our practices address water quality and funding. So as long as WMPs can still focus on ensuring that, they can work on those things. Catfish Creek WMA also receives funding from local entities in addition to the state. Both Schmeichel and Freiberger said WMAs without that funding support could be most impacted by the legislation. Freiberger also said he was concerned by a bill awaiting Governor Kim Reynolds' signature that would ban local governments from restricting nutrient runoff from property development sites beyond what the state law dictates. What it's saying is we can't put any more requirements on a development, Freiberger said. What runoff is there before development starts, we can't restrict runoff beyond that. Or with the depth of soil replacement, when they go back to replace soil. Say we want 8 inches. Well, if the DNR says they only need 3 inches, we can't require more. Freiberger said he has requested that Reynolds veto the bill. Dubuque County Watersheds staff members said they did not know if the bill would change county practices. And now our final front page piece, which also comes with a picture, is titled UWP Chancellor Invested. And the picture shows the chancellor being invested with a cap and her gown and such. And beneath it, it reads, University of Wisconsin-Platteville Chancellor Tammy Ivedovich is presented with the Chancellor's Medallion by Karen Walsh, President of the Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents, during Ivedovich's investiture ceremony in Williams Fieldhouse at the University in Platteville Thursday. And our article reads, University of Wisconsin-Platteville on Thursday formally recognized the leadership of its newest chancellor, the first woman to hold the role and a first-generation college student who already has helmed the college through tough waters, in an investiture ceremony filled with elaborate and personal iconography, including pink flamingos, a robot, and a running theme of rowing. Tammy Ivedovich was given UWP's Chancellor's Medallion with a lot of hope in the air. Ivedovich was named UWP's 15th Chancellor just under a year ago, April 25th, 2023, after leading the school on an interim basis for several months. When you're talking about your leadership style, it puts you in a vulnerable spot because it is so personal, Ivedovich said during her investiture address. Many times, as leaders, we are asked to make impossible decisions where there are no right decisions. If we are going to be successful, it will take all of us. I've been told that if you want to go fast, you might have to go alone. If you want to go far, we'll have to go together. A first-generation college student from rural Nebraska, Ivedovich spent much of her early academic career focused on rural issues. During her tenure at Wayne State College, she helped create the college's Rural Law Opportunities Program and grew its existing Rural Health Opportunities Program. For this, she was championed at Thursday's ceremony by Wayne State College President Marizek Ramez, who marked Ivetovich's admitted fondness for pink flamingos by gifting her a plastic replica and likening some of Ivetovich's attributes to those of the birds. The development of those programs are an example of her pink flamingo tendencies to be innovative and creative using the skills of her people, and of her equilibrium and strategic decision-making, Ramez said. Ivetovich spoke Thursday of including her drive for wellness and success for students and residents of rural Wisconsin in her new role. I want UW-Platteville to lean into its strength as an access institution by listening closely and authentically, partnering with our partners here in Southwest Wisconsin, she said. I want to be a fabric of this wonderful community. As a sign of her support for current UWP's students, Ivetovich was awarded her Chancellor's Medallion by a robot built by the college's championship robotics team. And in recognition of her apparently famous rowing-focused inspirational speeches, University of Wisconsin System President Jay Rothman awarded Ivetovich the system's first official University of Wisconsin Oars to mark her investiture. Platteville Regional Chamber Executive Director Wayne Wadars attended Ivetovich's investiture and said Ivetovich already had exhibited her desires for community involvement. I've been a supporter of her from day one, he said. Just through her personality and her openness, you can tell that she is genuine in her desire to collaborate with the business community, with everybody, really. Ivetovich's time leading UWP has included challenges, such as a round of high-profile layoffs amid a budget shortfall. But it also has been marked by plenty of hope, according to well-wishers in Platteville on Thursday. UWP and the Platteville community got hard news last year when a budget deficit due to declining enrollment, rising inflation, reduced state aid, and a previous tuition freeze from the Wisconsin State Legislature drove Ivetovich to announce a more than $9 million cost-cutting plan that resulted in the elimination of 111 positions. In an interview with the Telegraph Herald, she acknowledged how hard the decision had been, but expressed hope moving forward. Sure, there were hard decisions to make, she said, but that is part of this work. And I am confident and hopeful every day in this institution moving forward. Wisconsin Senator Howard Markland, Republican Spring Green, attended the event and commended Ivetovich for her tough decision-making already and said she had him in her corner. I connect with her almost once a month just because this place and these relationships are so important, he said. She made strong, uncomfortable decisions when she needed to. Enrollment has dropped 25% in 10 years. Administration has increased in that time. When I talk to people working here, they want this place to be financially strong so they don't have to go through that again. She did that. Now a piece of our Dubuque and Tri-State news. Local Right to Life event aims to raise $150,000. Dubuque County Right to Life's largest annual fundraiser on Thursday sought to encourage anti-abortion advocates to continue their cause in the midst of political polarization. The 30th annual Life Dinner took place at Grand River Center in Dubuque and, according to the group's executive director, Augustine Payne, addressed what some in the pro-life movement say are oppressive motives by the federal government. About 525 people were expected to attend the dinner, and organizers hoped proceeds from the event would amount to roughly $150,000 for the organization. This year's event featured a presentation by Mark Hoke, an author, activist, congressional candidate in Pennsylvania, and founder of The King's Men, a nonprofit men's outreach organization. Mark can speak to living in a polarized culture and standing strong in front of government intimidation tactics, Payne said. Hopefully, his experience can prevent other pro-life people from being bullied by the government and will educate people to also become an advocate for their pro-life movement. Houck currently is engaged in a civil lawsuit against the U.S. Department of Justice in which he seeks $1.1 million in damages he says he and his family suffered from the FBI during his 2022 arrest on charges of which he was later acquitted. Houck was charged with two counts of violating the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act following an alleged altercation with an abortion clinic escort outside a healthcare clinic. The FACE Act criminalizes the obstruction or intimidation of individuals seeking an abortion or exercising their First Amendment right to practice their religion at a place of worship. Houck was arrested on the charges at his Pennsylvania home. He said that arrest involved a raid of his home that has left a lasting impression on his seven children. They were held at gunpoint at 6:30 in the morning, Houck said of his family. That's PTSD right there for my kids, aged 13 down to 2. We are still dealing with those effects. Houck, a Catholic, described his presentation as a testimonial that has to do with being a Christian in the 21st century. The weaponization of the government against the American people is unprecedented, Houck said. And people of faith, Christians in particular, are enemies of the state. Augustine said the goal of inviting Houck to speak at the dinner was to address an us versus them theme in our culture, especially in the media. When you talk to people on the local streets, and we've done this, you can have a good conversation. We are able to create a space for people to have good dialogue in person, Payne said. But on TV, things sell when there's conflict. We now turn to the opinion page for a little while, and we have our view, the quick takes that represent the viewpoints of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. And today we have three smiley faces. Number one, elections office a win for all. The property swap between the city of Dubuque and Dubuque County that resulted in a new home for the county elections office was a good collaborative idea that keeps paying off. Last week saw the grand opening of the new elections office at 880 Central Avenue, the former home of Hendricks Feed and Seed Company. The building and a neighboring property had been purchased by the city of Dubuque in 2021 for $1.7 million as part of the city's plan to build a new parking ramp. In 2023, the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors approved what amounted to a property swap with the city for the adjacent parking lot the county owned, each party paying the other $1 for the other's property, as was legally required. With that swap, the elections office has, for the first time ever, a truly functional space that will serve voters effectively and efficiently. The new space is the most accessible location the department has ever had and the first without the need for law enforcement security. It is the first space the department has ever had where all full-time elections officials are together in one place and the first space designed with elections in mind. The new space will allow up to 12 people voting at a given time and from 6 to 8 being processed. The new space also features automatic ADA accessible sliding doors at an entrance at grade with the sidewalk outside, increasing accessibility. And the overhaul of the space came in well under budget at just $8,000 for all the renovations. That's a win for taxpayers, a win for voters, and a win for county employees. It's great to have this ready for a busy election year. our second smiley face, the combination of Wisconsin Representative Travis Tranel, Republican Cuba City, and Senator Howard Markland, Republican Spring Green, continues to work hard in the name of emergency medical services providers in the state. This common sense legislation from the two local lawmakers recently was signed into law by Governor Tony Evers. The measure will add two volunteer rural emergency medical services providers appointed by the governor to the state's Emergency Medical Services Board. Tranel explained that the idea is to ensure smaller volunteer rural EMS departments have a seat at the table when policy changes are being considered that impact training, rules, and licensure requirements. Currently, the EMS board consists of 11 voting members and provides advice to the Department of Health Services on a wide array of EMS policies and topics. Membership is heavily weighted toward paramedics, doctors, and professors with PhDs, without including the volunteer rural department's perspective. That changed now with the addition of these two spots. No surprise, the measure had full support from Southwest Wisconsin Rural Volunteer Departments, as well as many other emergency services organizations. Kudos to Tranel and Markland for having the backs of rural firefighters. And our final smiley face? Dubuque residents with thoughts on how the city should address affordable housing and alternative transportation options will get a chance to weigh in this week. Graduate students from the University of Iowa's School of Planning and Public Affairs are working with the Iowa Initiative for Sustainable Communities to help develop action plans around those topics. According to city officials, focus areas include ways that zoning and ordinance changes can increase the supply of housing, mitigating the energy cost burden, ways to streamline new development, home ownership disparities across diverse populations, strategies to increase affordable market rate housing and income qualified housing, addressing micro mobility, implementing safe routes to schools, increasing awareness around walkability and bikeability, making short distances more accessible with a 10-minute walks campaign. The open house will be held from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Saturday, April 6th at the Multicultural Family Center, 1157 Central Avenue. Weigh in and share your thoughts on ways to make your community better. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. This is Ken, and I am reading from the Friday, April 5th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Stanley W. Gobrecht, Belmont, Wisconsin. Stanley W. Gobrecht, 77, of Belmont, became an angel with loving family by his side at UW-Madison Hospital and Clinics Thursday, March 28th. Husband, dad, uncle, and friend will be dearly missed. Stan was born January 22nd, 1947, the son of Walter and Mary Niehaus Gobrecht. He graduated from Belmont High School in 1965 and completed the Farmer's Short Course in UW-Madison. Stan was united in marriage to Maureen Trudy Clark, June 5, 1987. Stan grew up on the family farm in Belmont. He was an easygoing and loving soul. His passions were farming, horseback riding, school bus driving, country dancing, being a member and officer of the All-Star Country Dance Club, traveling, and church missions. Stan was a lifelong member of Peace Lutheran Church in Platteville. He traveled with Habitat for Humanity to Guatemala. Stan took many horseback riding trips out west, with the Badlands his favorite. Stan was a loving family man. He will always be remembered as an amazingly kind, caring, and compassionate person. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations to the National Kidney Foundation or Peace Lutheran Church in Stan's name. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 6th at Peace Lutheran Church in Platteville. Pastor Jasmine Tesdell will officiate. Burial will be at Hillside Cemetery, Platteville, following the service. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. until the time of the service at the church. The Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville, is serving the family. Online condolences can be made at www.melbyfh.com. Dean A. Stocken, Bellevue. Dean A. Stocken, 56, of Bellevue, died Tuesday, April 2nd. A celebration of life will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Saturday, April 6th, at Horizon Hall in Bellevue. Hockman Meyer Funeral and Cremation Service of Bellevue is assisting the family. Elizabeth M. Luna, Clarksville, Tennessee. Elizabeth M. Liz Luna, 89, of Clarksville, Tennessee, formerly of Cuba City, Wisconsin, passed away Tuesday, April 2nd. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 10th, at St. Rose of Lima Church, Cuba City, with Reverend David Flanagan officiating. Burial will be at Evergreen Cemetery, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, April 9th, at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City, and from 10:45 Wednesday at the church prior to the service. Liz was born July 20th, 1934, in Prairie du Chien, the daughter of Elmer and Agnes Vonick Webster. She graduated from Patch Grove High School and then moved to Chicago, Illinois, to work as a nanny. Liz was united in marriage to Santos T. Luna on December 23, 1955, in Waukegan, Illinois. He preceded her in death on August 30, 2014. Liz and Santos raised their family of 10 children in Platteville. She worked at Piggly Wiggly and the Platteville Telephone Company. After Santos retired, they moved to Andrew, Iowa, where she owned and managed several area restaurants. Liz loved family get-togethers with her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She enjoyed country music, dancing, and singing, as well as playing cards and trips to the casino. In lieu of flowers, an Elizabeth M. Luna Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be sent to the funeral home at 123 North Jackson Street, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. And we have one little one to welcome into the world. Wednesday, April 3rd, Learman. Lance and Cora Learman of Shelbsburg, Wisconsin, a girl at Southwest Health, Platteville. We have one additional Dubuque Tri-State piece of news. Plans for Pocket Park take shape in Dubuque. Nonprofit Dubuque Forward recently shared initial designs for a Mississippi River-themed pocket park planned for the site of a former gas station at 9th Street and Central Avenue. The group expects crews to break ground at the park early this summer. The property would include a bike path, space for food trucks, and the city's first microforest, according to Mike Stickley of Stickley Morton Architects, which is designing the park. The space would be seen as an oasis for the neighborhood that Stickley called a concrete jungle otherwise. For the design, we wanted it connected to Dubuque and the Mississippi River, Stickley said. The sidewalk's shape is meant to give people reflection of the Mississippi River meandering through. Renderings say the path will be based on Molo Slough, which is located just north of Massey Marina and named after the Molo family of Dubuque-based Molo companies, who also donated the property for the pocket park. The river theme of the Pocket Park extends to a school of fish sculptures that would be installed in berms of native grasses to give the impression that they are swimming. The fish would be at home along Central Avenue, which historically was a floodplain. The planned native grass is a no-mow, Stickley said. It was all designed to have very little maintenance needed, be very natural, and soften everything around it. We're planning super dense planting, multiple plant species, plus a microforest to the south side. Microforests are an urban green space technique growing in popularity nationally. They provide patches of urban biodiversity in areas that historically have lacked it and can work as heat sinks, cooling areas, and lowering cities' impact on climate change. Debbie Butler, member of the Dubuque Forward's Recreation Spaces and Natural Areas Passion Team, hopes to continue with more microforests in Dubuque moving forward. It'll be the first of its kind in Dubuque, she said, of the new Pocket Park, so we hope to learn lessons for more. We're getting trees through a grant from the city, another piece of this partnership. Stickley said Dubuque Forward would cover costs of the Pocket Park through donations from members, then enter an agreement with the city for limited needed maintenance. While the park would be primarily intended for pedestrians, it would also include a bicycle path so cyclists can visit off of busy streets nearby, furthering another Dubuque Forward priority of connectivity. There are all of these great spots in Dubuque that are not connected well, Stickley said. So this is the midpoint between Main Street and the historic Millwork District. Next, I have one letter to the editor I forgot to read during the opinion page portion, so I'll read that now before we move on. Dubuque should not install traffic cameras. William Welbus, Hidden Meadows Drive, Dubuque. Traffic cameras are not beneficial and should not be installed in our city. Traffic cams will not help with speeding for many reasons. For example, cost of installing these cameras affects and impacts the city. In my opinion, you will see people decide to not pay the fine and act like they didn't see the fine in the mail, or just simply say they didn't get it. In Scottsdale, Arizona, when a resident gets a speeding ticket, they decide to not pay the fine. That is what I can see start to happen here. As a result of this happening in our city, the city will just end up losing money and paying to put the cameras up and not getting any money back from fines. Overall, that money will come out of our pockets as taxpayers, which will result in more taxes to fund the speed cams and support all the money the cities are spending that is lacking return. Now I'll start looking at bits and pieces here and there throughout the paper that we have today, and one from Lifestyle in Short. Grand Rising Star announce audition dates for summer productions. The Grand Opera House and Rising Star Theater Company will hold auditions later this month for the summer productions of School of Rock and The Addams Family. Performers interested in auditioning for both productions will need to complete one audition. Contact casting@thegrandoperahouse.com if you cannot be there at the start of the audition time. General casting auditions for youth actors ages 10 to 14 for School of Rock will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, April 20th, and for adult actors ages 15 and older at 6 p.m. Sunday, April 21st, and 7 p.m. Monday, April 22nd. For the Addams Family, general casting auditions will be held at 6 p.m. Sunday, April 21st, and 7 p.m. Monday, April 22nd. Actors will be notified if they are needed for a callback. Fill out the digital audition form prior to arrival to save time at auditions. Be prepared to list all conflicts. Come dressed to move as the audition will start with a short movement dance call. Prepare a 1-minute cut, approximately 32 bars, of a musical theater song or any song you feel confident and comfortable singing. Bring sheet music in the correct key if you would like an accompanist to play along with you. Those interested in auditioning for Dewey Finn in School of Rock will need to complete a guitar audition. Auditions will be held at the Grand's rehearsal space in the Arcade Building, 880 Locust Street, Suites 222 and 228. Enter through the Locust Street entrance. And our news in brief pieces, I'm finding. Authorities, one hurt when vehicle blown off road in Delaware County. From Manchester, authorities said one person reported a possible injury after his vehicle was blown off the road in Delaware County. Justin A. Ensign, 25, of Galena, reported a possible injury but was not transported to a hospital, according to the Delaware County Sheriff's Department. A report states that Ensign was driving west on 240th Street at 2:08 p.m. March 26th when his vehicle was blown into the south ditch and rolled onto its side. Joe Davies County Fair Group accepting grant applications from Galena. A Joe Davies County nonprofit is accepting applications for its annual grant program. Joe Davies County Country Fair Charities, Inc. is accepting applications from other nonprofit organizations across the county, according to a press release. Funding for the grants comes from the proceeds of the annual Galena County Fair held in Galena each fall. The organization provides financial assistance to people in need in the county through the grant awards to other nonprofit groups. Applications may be obtained by writing to Joe Davies County, County Fair Charities, Inc., P.O. Box 6394, Galena, Illinois 61036, or online at galenacountyfair.com/grant program. Applications must be postmarked by May 1st. Grants will be awarded in June. Dubuque County communities receive tree planting grants. Three Dubuque County communities have received tree planting grants from Alliant Energy. Dubuque, Dyersville, and Worthington are among 41 Iowa communities receiving grants totaling nearly $145,000 through the company's community tree planting program, part of Alliant's 1 Million Trees initiative, according to a press release. The release states that Dubuque will receive $5,000 to plant a proposed 23 trees, Dyersville will receive $5,000 for 24 trees, and Worthington will receive $3,500 for 20 trees. The utility works with the Trees Forever organization to help communities develop, select, and plant a diverse mix of trees. Iowa communities are eligible to apply for grants of up to $5,000 annually to fund new trees. Visit alliantenergy.com/1 million trees for more information. Woodcock Walk free event planned for today in Bernard. Three local conservation departments will collaborate this evening to host a free event at Whitewater Canyon Wildlife Area. The Woodcock Walk will be held at 7:30 p.m. at Whitewater Canyon, 29112 9th Avenue, according to an online event announcement. Staff from the conservation departments of Dubuque and Jackson and Jones County will lead a short walk to find woodcocks. The event announcement states that the small, camouflaged woodland birds are known for an interesting mating ritual that includes aerial acrobatics. Attendees should dress for the weather and wear good walking shoes. The event is free and open to all ages. Dubuque Library to host free movie showing April 11th. Dubuque's Library will host a free movie screening this month. American Fiction will be shown at 6 p.m. Thursday, April 11th in the third floor Eigler Auditorium at Carnegie Stout Public Library, 360 West 11th Street. Based on the 2001 novel Erasure by Percival Everett, American Fiction is an Oscar-nominated comedy drama about a frustrated novelist who uses a pen name to write a satire mocking literary stereotypes expected of Black authors that is mistaken for serious literature. The movie is rated R for language, drug use, sexual references, and brief violence. Call the library at 563-589-4225 or visit carnegiestout.org for more information. Rescue Squad plans fundraising event, Bernard, Iowa. A local rescue squad will host a fundraising event this weekend. The Bernard Rescue Auction and Dance will be held Saturday, April 6th at the Bernard Emergency Services Center, 547 Rollis Street. The event includes sandwiches and chips available starting at 6 p.m. and an auction beginning at 7:30 p.m. Admittance is open to ages 21 and older. Donations will be accepted, with proceeds supporting vehicle maintenance and continuing education. Edgewood woman pleads guilty to involuntary manslaughter in UTV crash. A Delaware County woman who was driving a UTV in a 2021 rollover crash that killed a passenger has pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter. Hannah L. Meese, 27, of Edgewood, recently entered the plea in Iowa District Court of Delaware County, and the sentencing hearing is set for April 16th. Meese initially was charged with homicide by a vehicle operating while intoxicated. Court documents state Meese intends to seek a deferred judgment in the case and 1 year of probation. With a deferred judgment, if probation and payment obligations are successfully completed, the record of the case is expunged. Prosecutors have not agreed to the deferred judgment, but have stated they do not intend to pursue jail time at the time of sentencing. Court documents state that Meese was operating a UTV at about 7:55 p.m. May 2nd, 2021 on Wood Edge Drive in Edgewood with passenger Jordan G. Kabaka, 32, of Edgewood. Meese failed to maintain control while negotiating a curve in the roadway, and she and Kabaka were both ejected from the vehicle. Kabalka sustained fatal injuries and died at the scene. Meese suffered serious injuries and was transported to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. Meese's blood was drawn and tested at the Division of Criminal Investigation Criminalistics Laboratory in Ankeny. Documents state that testing revealed a blood alcohol content of more than 0.08, Iowa's legal limit. Authorities: woman used deception to acquire truck in Delaware County, from Manchester. Authorities said an Eastern Iowa woman used deception to acquire a medium-duty truck in Delaware County. Jennifer J. Danes, 41, of Cedar Rapids, was arrested at 2:35 p.m. March 28th in Manchester on a charge of second-degree theft, according to the Delaware County Sheriff's Department. Court documents state that Danes took a 2000 International 4900 truck on March 7th from an address in Manchester. Danes was in possession of a replacement title indicating that she had purchased the vehicle in February, documents state. Authorities investigated and determined that Danes used deception to gain the title and transfers. Master Conservationist Program planned. Iowa State University Extension and Outreach for Dubuque County will host a 7-session Master Conservationist Program beginning this month. The program highlights different natural resources in Dubuque County. Topics include soils, forests, prairies, streams, and conservation practices, according to a press release. Sessions will be held at 6 p.m. Tuesdays from April 23rd to June 4th. Class duration ranges from 1 to 3 hours each. Meeting locations rotate around Dubuque County and will take place outdoors. Cost is $30. The registration deadline is April 22nd. Visit tinyurl.com/dubextconserve for more information and to register. We have one piece from the city government. Pools, dog parks highlight budget discussion. Tuesday was Leisure Services Night in Dubuque City Council's series of fiscal year 2025 budget hearings. Leisure Services Director Marie Ware said the department has a combined 92.3 full-time equivalent employees and helped define the scope of the department's work by emphasizing the importance of the department's temporary and seasonal workers. Steve Furshall, Park Division Manager, provided overviews of forestry, horticulture, trails, and parks. Three small parks will be added to the city this year, and the emergence of pickleball has necessitated the construction of courts in several city parks where there already are tennis and volleyball courts. Jim Medler of Dubuque is a regular user of Dubuque's Dog Park along North Grandview Avenue near Bunker Hill Golf Course. He shared some concerns about the condition of the park and offered some thoughts on opening a second dog park. "I find it a gateway to the city," Meter said. "Many people who use the park are out-of-state travelers. Some are parents of college students. It's a year-round park. I don't know how many of our parks have activity over 300 days per year or more. It is well-utilized, but I feel it has been a little neglected." Meter said the park is muddy and noted its fencing is getting weaker. He said there needs to be more, yet smaller garbage cans for pet waste spread throughout the park. "They contain a lot of dog waste, and they are about chin high. When you walk up to that and flip up the lid to get rid of your thingy, I sure wish it was down by my feet and not right here," Meter said, rubbing his nose. He also recommended spreading wood chips on the ground to mitigate the mud and encourage people to walk further out into the park to pick up dog waste. Fisher Furschel said compaction is a big problem with the park's turf and that the concrete pad there was enlarged to spread out the entry point of dogs and humans into the play area. "Dog parks are hard to maintain," Furschel said. "Yes, use is very heavy and compaction is an issue. When it rains, yes, there is mud." Meter also recommended a second dog park be added along 16th Street near the highway overpass next to the Bee Branch Creek Greenway. He said off-street parking already exists at the site, which would be a safety improvement over the on-street parking along Grandview currently. "That would be a big benefit to our pet owners who have to parallel park along the roadway," Meter said. "I have seen accidents, three of them, and hear horns honking a lot. When you are getting out with dogs on a leash, you have enough trouble without 35-mile-per-hour traffic right in your heels." Councilmember Kathy Wethel seconded Meter's safety concerns. "That dog park is busy," Wethel said. "I can validate what he said about the concern people have about getting out of their cars on a busy street with their dog. I'd like to hear what we can do about that in the future." Furschel said $60,000 is in the five-year capital improvement budget for in 2029 for planning on a second dog park. Furschel also thanked Meter for his volunteer efforts at the dog park, picking up waste and keeping the bag dispensers full. Mayor Cavanaugh directed an in-depth discussion about pools following a presentation by Recreation Director Dan Kroger, which highlighted increased use of parks and recreation programs. Cavanaugh said he did not see any major ticket items for pools in the capital improvement plan covering the years ahead. He asked City Manager Mike Van Milligan what it would take to make a substantial investment in pool overhauls. "There is coming a time when, as a community, we are going to have to make a tough choice about what we are going to do," Cavanaugh said. "When that choice is in front of us, what are the city's options?" Van Milligan said the initiative would require a referendum and 60% voter approval to make it happen, and not only because of the price tag. "There is no capacity in our budget to make that happen," Van Milligan said, "and it's not an essential corporate purpose. We're rehabbing all of the fire stations. That is an essential corporate purpose. But to build a pool, no, you would have to have a referendum to issue a general obligation debt." Cavanaugh confirmed that when Sutton and Flora pools were rehabbed about 30 years ago, a referendum was required. "And the community voted to do that," Cavanaugh said. Very interesting information. Now we have the weekend buzz. What to be doing this weekend up there in the tri-states? Art at Your Library, Bly, Marting, and Valentine. Today, second floor, Rotunda, Carnegie Stout Public Library. 5:30 to 7:30, jewelry maker Mary Lee Marting, mixed media artist John Bly, and painter Robert Valentine are local artists who will be available to meet and greet visitors and sell their work at this show opening. Music will be provided by Northeast Iowa School of Music faculty. Refreshments will be available. Admission is free. Illinois trout fishing season opening weekend, Saturday, multiple locations. In addition to the Apple River in Apple River Canyon State Park in Joe Davies County, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources has stocked other area fishing spots. A map of statewide fishing opportunities and more information is available at ifishillinois.org. Dubuque's largest flea market and garage sale, Saturday, Tri-State Independent Blind Society, 1068 Cedar Cross Road, 8 to 3. Over 100 tables filled with great deals. Bring the family and find some treasures. Garage sale and flea market items, baked goods, direct sales, crafts, and more. Admission, early bird entry from 8 to 10 a.m., $5. Regular entry from 10 a.m. to 3, $2. Becoming an Outdoor Woman Spring Workshop, Saturday, Mines of Spain State Recreation Area, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Learn outdoor skills from women instructors during this day of fun-filled sessions. Lunch will be provided by Pheasants Forever. Bring your own dinnerware. An optional guided hike at the end of lunch will be offered. Learn camping and backpacking basics, chainsaw safety, and bow hunting. Registration is required at tinyurl.com/outdoor-woman. Cost, a suggested donation is appreciated, but not required.